item, we have moved 1344, and in its place, we have inserted 1337. Please read 1337.
Accept the State of Housing in Portland 2018 report.
Never fails.
I left my Diet Coke.
There it is.
In the refrigerator. Can someone bring
one moment, please. We have Shannon Callahan and Matthew Scheibold are going to make the introductions. Welcome. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioner. Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau. Thank you for prioritizing this report this afternoon. I am here today with Matt Scheibold to present the fourth annual Comprehensive State of Housing Report, which is designed to provide update data on both the current housing market and the Portland Housing Bureau's progress towards our strategic initiatives. Before I turn it over to Matthew to present an overview of the summary of our findings, I'd like to thank and acknowledge the work of the staff at PHB, especially Bamal, Raj Bhandari, and as you can see behind you, for those not on camera but in the room, some of the staff who worked on compiling this data, David, Victoria, Martha, Michelle, and Emily. I'd also like to thank the staff who worked to achieve the results that you see in this report, which really is the work of every single one of our 70-plus employees at the Bureau. I'd now like to turn it over to Matthew to give you a summary of findings of what we have discovered this year.
So, members of council, Matt Scheibold for the record. So first, taking a step back, looking at the citywide view, the city continues to grow, and in recent years at a slightly more accelerated rate. We are seeing record numbers of market and affordable units opening, but we need additional units to keep up with both population trends and trends in affordability. And unfortunately, we do continue to see increases in disparities. Not only amongst low-income Portlanders, but communities of color, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, that require more resources and more programming for our fellow Portlanders. So looking at population, we're the fifth largest city on the West Coast, with our growth up to 1.5% annually. A large portion of that growth since the year 2000 has been with communities of color. Of the roughly 91,000 individuals that have moved to Portland, or the increase in population, about 22% are from communities of color. We're currently at around 620,000 people and around 260,000 households. While we are seeing increases in our median incomes, I think you all have had reports about increases in the median incomes. There are disparities in incomes, and incomes are not growing evenly across the board, while median incomes are growing for white households, for communities of color. They're stagnant or declining, and I'll talk about that more in a bit as well. As you can see here in the slide, and it's in the report as well, the median income for renters is around $37,000 per year, when compared to owners is $83,000 per year. And if you look at it by race, white and Asian households are around $60,000 per year, and other communities of color are around $32,000 per year. And so we see significant disparities in income for communities of color. Communities of color are also disproportionately renters in our city and struggling with affordability. If you look at the housing stock from 2002 to 2017, we continue to see high levels of production. In fact, in 2017, it was our highest production in the last 15 years, with 7,300 new units. Looking at rental affordability, we know that rent increases have gone up by about 75% in the last since about 2005. This is a graph of annual rent increases quarter by quarter. And so you see that the average rent increase from 2010 to 2017 is around 4%, but we saw several years where rent increases were 6 to 8% annual rent increases. And that is starting to slow down. The rate of rent increases are slowing down, with the average at around $1,400 per month. When you're looking at rental affordability, we have a number of households in our household profiles that are completely priced out of the market. 0 to 30% AMI households are unable to afford in any of our 24 neighborhood analysis areas, as well as the average single mother household, Black household, Native American household, and Pacific Islander household. Since our first report in 2015, we have seen significant declines in affordability for many of our household profiles as we continue to grapple with a housing affordability crisis in the city.
So when you say single mother households, is that opposed to a single parent household?
The numbers are roughly equivalent for a single mother or a single parent. Single mothers have slightly lower incomes, so we use them in our profiles. Looking at the current need, if you look at renters across the board, about 50% of renters are not cost burden in the city, and about 50%, 49% are cost burden. Of those renters that are cost burden, 22% are considered cost burden, which means they're paying more than 30% of their income toward rent, and 27 are extremely cost burden, which means they're paying more than 50% of their income toward rent. And if you're curious about numbers for households, we look at, you know, we specifically serve households at 80% AMI and below, and there are about 31,000 households at 80% AMI and below that are extremely cost burdened. So that's that 27% category, and around 21,000 households below 80% AMI that are cost burdened. So that's that 22% category. If you look at homeownership affordability, most neighborhoods now have a median home sales price of over $400,000. And at the Bureau, we're looking at prices of between $300,000 to $325,000 as probably affordable to the average Portlander. But I would note that that's not affordable to communities that have disproportionately low incomes. The overall median price in 2017 was $406,000. And we've seen an increase from 2011 to 2017 of about $150,000 in the median price. I would also note that the most significant increases in price have been in the Lentz Foster and 122nd and Division neighborhoods, which Lentz Foster has seen an increase in price of 113%, so over doubling from 2011 to 2017. And 122nd and Division has increased by 90%, so almost doubling over that same time frame. And so we're seeing East Portland neighborhoods, their home prices are rapidly escalating toward the citywide median price.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Lentz Foster, there's the urban renewal district. What would be prompting the high rise in cost at 122nd and Division?
For the home prices?
Yeah.
It's just the overall hot
so there's
market.
There's
nothing particular about the
neighborhoods. That's just an example.
Well, the only thing I would note is that they were very affordable in 2011. The prices were much lower in the $100,000 to $200,000 range.
Okay.
So compared to other neighborhoods, people seeking a more affordable purchase price may have been incentivized to look in those neighborhoods. And so while the dollar amount is not as significant as other neighborhoods, the percentage changes.
Yes. Matthew, I went to the Foster Winterfest the other day, which was an event hosted by Venture Portland.
Drove around a little bit and also went and visited some small businesses. And one thing that struck me was the interesting variety of home styles in a relatively close-in neighborhood that had been historically affordable. In a place where we're starting to make big investments, the transportation investments, streets, sidewalks, other things. And then you look at what are some of the businesses that are coming in. They're very interesting. They're not dissimilar from some of the businesses you're starting to see on North Williams. And their businesses in response to the buying power of what's happening, you know, north and south. And so it's going through tremendous change. Mm-hmm. And but there's a nice stock of homes that have been historically undervalued, and it's still relatively close in. So it strikes me as one of those areas that is going to see enormous pressure on home prices.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. In reflecting on the report this year, I look back on our first report in 2015, and one of the home ownership data points that jumped out was that there were six of the 24 neighborhoods that immigrant households foreign-born, as the census designation, could afford to purchase in 2015, and that number has dropped to zero in this year because of both incomes and the median prices. So I think those neighborhoods were some of those six neighborhoods that were affordable. So yes. So with that, that's kind of a high-level overview of the report. It's, again, similar trends as our last report around both renter and owner affordability. But we have made great progress with our programming to try and address the affordability crisis, and Shannon's going to walk through some of our progress with our strategic initiatives.
Thank you, Matthew. This year, we are going to talk with you about five of the Housing Bureau's strategic initiatives. The first is the Portland Housing Bond. Since voters passed the Portland Housing Bond, five projects have already been identified, three of those in just the last 6 months, totaling more than 630 units completed or in progress under the bond to date. By the end of 2008, we are nearly halfway to our initial 1,300-unit goal, as promised to the voters. And next year, we'll be working with our oversight committee to expand bond production with the new leverage opportunity granted to us by voters with their support of a constitutional amendment. Just to give you a few examples of what this progress means for Portlanders, at 105th and East Burnside, which opened this fall, with the coordination of our joint office partners, we've moved families and children directly from our streets and shelters into stable homes. At the Ellington Apartments, which was the first bond purchase under Portland's housing bond, we now house 263 children in affordable family-sized homes, providing them with the stability they need to succeed in school and beyond. And we've been able to stabilize and secure renters at the Westwind Apartments, adding professional 24-hour on-site management and support services for the residents. Of the bond units planned to date, 44% are for incomes at 30% or below, and we are nearly two-thirds of towards reaching our goals for 300 units of supportive housing. The North and Northeast Neighborhood Strategy was established in 2014 by and for the community. The strategy prioritizes families and individuals with generational ties to North and Northeast Portland for new affordable housing opportunities, both in rental and in home ownership. And we work to stabilize long-term community residents with home repair programs. With this strategy, the city acknowledges and works to correct the impacts our actions have had to gentrify the neighborhood and displace residents. As of the writing of this report, we have opened or planned for the opening of more than 501 new rental units, well above our goal, with two new buildings opening just in the last few months. The Beatrice Morrow on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard is welcoming new residents, like a young woman and her daughter who have been couch surfing for more than 2 years, whose generational ties to the neighborhood go back for decades. And the Charlotte B. Rutherford, whose namesake is an esteemed community activist, a formal civil rights attorney, journalist, and administrative law judge. By the end of this year, we will have supported 500 low-income homeowners with a combination of grants and loans to stabilize them in their homes. And we have worked with our oversight committee to establish clear and measurable goals to achieve more than 110 homeowners with this strategy. I'll now turn to inclusionary zoning. Our inclusionary housing program, which went into effect in February of 2017, is successfully creating affordability in the private market throughout our city. In the first 18 months, the program has already created in process in private developments 362 affordable units in 43 projects, to be exact. If we had invested public resources to subsidize these units, it would represent approximately $32 million in public investment. We also were keeping a close eye on the program, making refinements with City Council in real time to adjust to market realities. Our next strategic initiative this year is the supporting housing goal established by the city and the county to create 2,000 new units of supportive housing by 2028. Since that time, we've collaborated with the Joint Office, other local, state, and community partners in unprecedented ways to create new supportive housing units. The result is that we already have more than 500 new supportive housing units opened or in progress by 2021. This also has spurred us to partner in the first-of-its-kind initiative, braiding funding for services and capital with the Joint Office, Multnomah County Health Department, and Oregon Housing and Community Services to create a replicable, cost-efficient model to integrate supportive housing into the development of single-room occupancy units.
Director Callahan, just so that we can read this page, which is taken from page 112 of the report, just would you remind us, how do you reconcile the goal of 2,000 new units by 2028 and what's in the box that says 1,483 units by 2028?
Commissioner, I think what that's indicating is what the progress we've already made thus far. So the two numbers before that add up to 2,000. So that's trying to show we already have 162 units since we've reached that goal already operating as new supportive housing units. And then there's 355 planned by 2021. And the goal left to achieve is 1,483 units.
I see that. Thank you.
That's a countdown for us.
That's the obvious way to read it. So thank you.
We're keeping a thermometer daily at our office with how many supportive housing units are created.
So can I second Commissioner? I don't think it's entirely clear. So in future publications, can we maybe find a different way to present that data?
Absolutely.
Certainly.
I mean, now that you say that, it's really obvious, but you sort of have to say it first.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
I missed it for what it's worth.
So has that joint city, county, state notice of funds availability, is that on the streets now? Or?
We have already convened an internal and external review committee, and the mayor, the chair, and the Oregon Housing and Community Services are about to make their final recommendations. We expect an announcement.
So there's already been applications submitted?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We were very impressed with the pool of applicants, and we're excited for, I think, what lies ahead for this project.
Well, Dan's going to have a little extra time. It's not too late. Thank you.
The Rental Services Office.
Yeah, I know.
Trying to keep me relevant.
This year, the Portland Housing Bureau also launched a Rental Services Office to provide information on landlord-tenant, fair housing laws, coordinating legal aid services, and supporting tenant protections. We are now assisting close to 200 individuals a month through the hotlines, walk-ins, and emails. And the City Council has passed a rental registration requirement, ensuring we'll have accurate information on all rental properties in the City of Portland. We've also doubled our funding for legal assistance and education services. And in early 2019, we expect to make an announcement to provide legal assistance and enforcement for fair housing violations.
Say, can I just make a quick comment on the Rental Services Office? Some people asked a question of me the other day, why isn't it up and running as conceived? And I just want to be really clear with people. The bold vision will take us several years to get to because it requires sequential planning and sequencing and, frankly, sequencing of the funding to actually get us to the full vision. But we now have six people employed in the Rental Services Office. They are actively engaged in fair housing issues. They are overseeing the Rental Services Commission. They're in the process of standing up the important work around the rental registration program. So I don't want people to believe we blew that off. We've not blown it off. It is, in fact, up and running in its first part of the sequence, and people should fully expect that to come to full fruition.
Yes, and as this indicates, we are open for phone calls. We have walk-in hours, and we accept emails at any time that anyone has any questions. We are generally there for them during the work hours, I should say.
Very good. Thank you.
And then finally, to review our 2018 production. By this year, through a combination of all of the products that we offer, including direct subsidy, inclusionary zoning, and then the old, what was known as multi-program, we will have reached heights of a new affordable housing this year, topping more than 800. This brings the total number of units in our regulated portfolio to 14,400 units. Though we don't have exact figures on the rental market, we have estimated 125,000 units in the rental market. If that is indeed the case, 12% of all rental units in the city of Portland would be regulated by the city of Portland as affordable housing. In real terms, the number of units that we opened this year means housing for approximately 1,800 Portlanders. So we've looked at the size of the bedrooms that we're offering and extrapolated who's living there. That means the 800 units are actually providing homes for 1,800 Portlanders. We are excited that we have new units in all areas of the city, including high opportunity areas, connecting residents to jobs, transit, and the amenities they need to survive. And thrive. Next year, we expect to increase our affordable housing production with more than 1,000 new units, welcoming families. And here are just a few of the highlights of the buildings that have opened this year or expected to open early next year. Vibrant, that you will see in the lower right-hand corner, is actually the property once known as 14th and Raleigh. In the Pearl District, which is...
I'm going to ask you that question. Where's Vibrant?
Yeah, okay. Vibrant is the property formerly known as 14th and Raleigh that will be specially prioritized for homeless families leaving the homeless family system and receiving great services and affordable housing with Innovative Housing, Inc. It's a very tall building. You can't miss it. If you're on 405, you'll see it very plainly.
Commissioner Fritz?
That slide really shows what Commissioner Fish refers to a lot, is that affordable housing doesn't have to be ugly housing, that these are could well be designed by the highest highfalutin developers. They're really nice.
And some are. The one there at 105th and Burnside was actually designed as market-rate housing, and we were able to acquire it.
That was great.
Actually, I, Commissioner Fritz, when during my tenure as housing commissioner, we toyed with the idea of doing an RFP, tried to figure out how to structure an RFP where we emphasize high design elements at a low cost and challenge the architect community, because we were hearing from the Brad Klofels and the other homegrown talent that they wanted to take a crack at trying to do something innovative. The last time we thought of doing something innovative like that was a Frank Gehry project that was that Howard Shapiro championed, that was once upon a time contemplated for the Pearl. Unfortunately, it was a budget buster. It cost so much to have a star architect, and the cost of materials and everything made it infeasible. But I've often thought, particularly with all the talent we have locally, if we challenge people to come up with high design at a lower cost, whether it's using modular or new components, new materials, whatever, I think we could even push the design envelope further and Bloomberg did this. Bloomberg had a design competition for a lot of the public buildings that New York City invested in. And I think the bar could even be higher if we could figure out a way legally to do that. Again, without driving up costs, because it would have to be coupled with show us great design at a bargain basement price.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's a very good idea. That that actually concludes our presentation on the State of Housing Report this afternoon. We'd be happy to answer any questions or delve deeper into any areas of the report that you'd like us to.
So I have one question.
Commissioner Fish.
So Commissioner Udaly can't be here, but her office and my office in reviewing this material had a similar question, which is we track lots of you include a lot of demographic information in this report, but where it's a little thin is information on people experiencing disabilities and how they are treated by the marketplace. Any thoughts of how we could beef that up?
So the Census Bureau does have some data on individuals experiencing disabilities, and their estimates are around 80,000 individuals in the city of Portland. And they break that out by what disability individuals are experiencing. I think where we have been short on data is around the stock, and that's something we've had conversations.
Around the stock?
Yeah, housing stock, the units themselves.
How many accessible units are
correct.
There?
Correct. And so we have been in conversations with Commissioner Udaly's office, and she has talked to us about the possibility of, once the rental registration system is in place, about getting better information on type A and type B units or fully accessible units.
Well, I would second that. And the two areas that I'm interested in is to what extent do people experiencing disabilities generally have access to an accessible unit? And then in light of the work we're doing around age-friendly Portland, how are older adults faring?
Right.
Because many of the things, many of the kinds of improvements that we're talking about that make a unit accessible make them more accessible to people with disabilities, older adults, and the like.
Absolutely.
And I would be interested in working with her and you folks to see how we can refine that data going forward.
Sounds good. Thank you, Commissioner.
And by the way, Shannon, thank you very much for doing a whole page on supportive housing. That's a new feature this year. Actually, I think it's two pages. It's two pages. So we won't let our environmental friends know how much paper we used on this one, but it's two pages on supportive housing, and that's an innovation in this year's report and much appreciated.
I mean, Commissioner, this report does contain some new data that our team pulled together. I wanted to point it out to you. We did not highlight it today, but I think it does answer some questions around communities regarding age friendliness, and it has to do with multi-generational households. We really tried to pull out some information for you on pages 18 and 19 and start to track the multi-generational households that reside in Portland and trends that we're seeing. We are seeing greater rates of multi-generational households in Portland, and so this is something I think you should expect to see us expand on and maybe a good place to address some of the issues around age friendliness next year. So we'll be happy to share that and talk with you about that more, Commissioner. Thank you.
Please, Dan.
Is that a positive or a negative? Does that mean more people are doubled up, or does that mean people are choosing to live with their parents or whatever?
It's for the multi-generational, it's the same family. So people living with either the next generation or the generation before that. So it's different than doubled up. It could be doubled up.
Yeah.
We can't say with certainty whether it is a cultural element to the family that they live multi-generationally or if it's an affordability issue. It's likely a combination of both. Yeah.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. I find it interesting that the median house. I appreciate all the demographic information. It's really helpful, and the way you've presented the material. The Native American folks, the median income has gone down, but the home ownership has gone up. Is there any? What's the explanation for that?
There's a fairly large margin of error due to the population size in the city of Portland. So for Pacific Islander households and Native American households, we can see a little bit more of a swing in the numbers in the margin of error because of that.
Okay.
We don't put the margin of error bars on here, but it is slightly larger for those households.
Right.
Yeah.
I found this chart that you gave of single-family production versus multifamily production really telling. You can see how little development of anything there was during the recession, but then the massive increase in multifamily development over the last 2 years since Mel Wheeler has been in charge, but very little growth in single-family households. Mm-hmm. So that coupled with the multi-generational issue. I didn't see anything in here about accessory dwelling units. Is it possible to put something about that in the next report?
Yes, we can break that out. It's in with the, I believe it's included in the single family. I can confirm and get back to you, but we can break that out. And I think the one comment I will make on the earlier point, when you dive into the multi-generational data, you'll find that most multi-generational households are in single family. Homes, because it breaks it out by housing type where multi-generational families are, and we still are not seeing single family unit permitting above pre-recessionary levels in the city.
Right.
Yeah.
That's troubling.
Very good.
Thank you.
I'll entertain a motion.
Move adoption.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Saltzman, a second from Commissioner Fritz. Please call the roll, Carla.
Fritz. Well, I appreciate that this is in paper because it would be take a long time to download from PDF, and it's also really educational to read through it. So thank you for doing that, for providing copies to our offices, and thank you for your work. Mayor Wheeler, you are making progress. We are making progress, and this is very clear documentation. And I, the numbers don't lie. Aye.
Fish.
This is the third version, fourth version? Fourth version of this report, and it seems to me it keeps getting better and more comprehensive. There's a treasure trove of really important data in here that helps inform the decisions we make. You know, we're making progress, but the analogy that I keep coming back to is from a Disney film, and that's with in Fantasia, with the folks in the basement, the brooms and the mops in the basement, furiously trying to dig out as the floodwaters come into the building. We know how to build strong partnerships and deliver multifamily affordable housing. We know how to tackle problems that are in front of us. What we can't do is we're not smarter than the market, and we can't we don't have any control nationally over the supply factors. And the supply factors are going to get more and more acute, more and more challenging. Mayor spoke this morning about, you know, the need for a more robust federal partner. There are limits to what we can do locally, and that's why we have to be careful about setting expectations. Making progress, you know, adding new units, doing everything we can, but Portland can't solve the national housing crisis. It's going to take more than Portland, but I am pleased that we're doing our part. Thank you for your excellent work. Please accept the report. Aye.
Saltzman.
Good report, and thank you, Director Callahan and Matthew and all the other Housing Bureau staff that worked on this report. I guess my two parting thoughts are as follows. One is be relentless on inclusionary housing. As I've said recently in several forums, inclusionary housing will produce far more affordable units over the long term than any bond measures will. So stick at it, and the results will be there. And then, as Shannon and both the mayor know, I'm we have one of the purposes of the housing bond is to invest in intergenerational communities to support raising and adopting foster kids. So intergenerational communities have a lot of positives for older adults, for foster kids, and so I hope we'll see some of those in the next report. So please vote aye.
Wheeler.
Great thoughts, Dan, and I certainly look forward to taking up that conversation. I think it's a very important one. First of all, obviously, I want to thank Director Callahan, and I want to thank I've only known you for 10 years. Anyway, Matt, thank you. Excellent report. I appreciate that. And I want to thank the entire Housing Bureau staff for putting this report together. This report gives data to what many of us have noticed for a long time, and for many people in our community, it gives us data to back what they just know to be true in their day-to-day lives. Portland continues to grow. We are now the fifth largest city on the West Coast. Young, educated people continue to join our city, but overall, Portland's wealth is unevenly distributed, and many of our historic residents are struggling to make ends meet and pay the rent. We all know that. And while the last 2 years did see historic housing production levels, we still don't have enough affordable homes for everybody who needs them in our community. So as well as reporting on the market conditions, this year's report does a particularly good job of giving us insight into the strategic initiatives and focus areas that are going to drive the Housing Bureau's work both in the present and in the years ahead to address low-income Portlanders, and I would even argue very, very low to zero income Portlanders. This report had some really great highlights. We brought 146 units to the Northeast Portland area under the Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy with 370 more units to come. We have over 350 affordable units that were already permitted by the Inclusionary Housing Program as of September, and that number is expected to rise precipitously. and that our affordable housing bond has already purchased 634 units of affordable housing. That's roughly half the housing that was promised by the bond in its first 7 years. So in my estimation, we're way ahead of schedule there. And with the voters passing both the regional housing bond and the accompanying constitutional amendment, we have the opportunity to get even more leverage out of that opportunity. And so while there is certainly much more work to be done in providing every Portlander with a safe, affordable place to call home, the Bureau and the city have obviously not been idle. We have approached this issue with passion. We've approached it with data-driven solutions. We have used innovative financing tools, and we have a sense of collective urgency to address this important issue. In pursuing its strategic initiatives, the bond, the inclusionary housing program, supportive housing, the North-Northeast housing strategy, the rental services office, the Joint Office of Homeless Services, the multi-program, and other efforts, the Bureau is working hard to move us closer to addressing our city's affordable housing needs. So I want to thank all of the staff assembled here. This is a collective representation of your hard work as a team. And I personally want to thank you for it because it remains one of, if not the top issue that the people of this city are concerned about it. And you are jumping in with both feet. So thank you for that. Thank you, Cupid Alexander, for my office, for always keeping me in the loop and working well with the housing team to make sure that we're all on the same page and that we're working with the entirety of the City Council to push our collective agenda forward. I vote aye. The report's accepted. And we will take a recess until 4 p.m.